Nobody likes hospitals, do they, Kathleen?
I can't imagine so.
I mean, either being in hospital as an inpatient or going to appointments, it's all pretty yucky usually, unfortunately, because you're usually not feeling your best or whatever. But if you're disabled as well, it sometimes comes with its own frustrations and problems. So I'm not talking about medical care per se, but I'm talking about awareness and communication and stuff like that. Like being blind and being handed stuff about major surgery in print that you can't read, or having learning disabilities and being examined without being spoken to first.
Mm. And I guess for doctors and nurses, it's the day to day, isn't it? So they are just used to seeing a huge number of patients. But it's actually just the psychological impact of being in hospital as well that perhaps is just a bit disregarded through that process.
This is Inside Out. Hello, my name is Emma Tracy. Joining us to talk about this today are Kathleen Hawkins.
Hello.
Stacey Rowe.
Hello.
And Steph Nimmo.
Hello.
We can start with you, Stacey. You're blind, but that's not what's put you in hospital recently.
Not recently, no. I turned up at A&E in March. I thought I had a chest infection because I couldn't breathe very well. And it turned out what I actually had was anemia onset by the very end stage of kidney failure. So I was told my kidneys were functioning at 2%, and I had absolutely no idea about any of this. I had no clue that I had any sort of organ problems, if you like.
Gosh. That is incredible, isn't it? It must have been shocking.
Quite shocking. I'm still shocked even now, but it was a very memorable moment, I would say. The treatment I received in A&E, I must say, was absolutely fantastic. Up to my diagnosis point, they were very, very, very quick. And so I was sort of swinging between two things. I felt, oh, thank goodness I came. And then I was thinking, oh my gosh, do I want to know? So yeah. It's a very bizarre time.
Tell me a bit about your experience of being in hospital as a blind patient who's very seriously ill.
It's been a roller coaster. It really has. And I don't want to preface anything I say by saying, you know, the NHS is absolutely amazing. And the fact that I could walk into A&E and that I've been able to receive the treatment I've had is incredible. The technology, the staffing, everything is just, it's in place for us. And you know, I couldn't feel luckier for that. Being visually impaired in hospital actually presented more of a challenge than I could ever have imagined. And it became the thing that upset me the most. And I know that sounds very bizarre when you've been told you've got kidney failure. And in addition to kidney failure, you know, I was told you need to go on dialysis and you need to have a transplant. So it was, you know, sort of explosions all over the place of information. But actually the visual impairment thing just became the biggest issue for the staff almost, because every time I met a new one, they started with, oh, you can't see. Is that why you're here? Mm-hmm. Or is that why you're finding it difficult to walk to the bathroom? And I would say, no, it's because I've got kidney failure. And then they would say, you know, they would meet my partner and say, oh, I assume this is your carer. And I would say, no, it's my partner. And we'd do this maybe 3-4 times a day. And it got to the point where I really felt it very difficult to handle. And I'm, you know, 30, I'm more than used to experiencing that, you know, in shops, in bars, wherever. And I didn't expect to experience it in a hospital. And I found it very, very difficult.
Being in hospital is scary anyway. So was it the kind of practicals, or was it the way that the doctors handled it as well, just that feeling that this must be why you're in hospital? Because I can imagine the practical information, they hand out a lot of leaflets as well. How did they communicate the information to you?
Practically, it was very difficult as well, because everything was presented to me like a menu in a restaurant. So you have to go on dialysis. Here are your dialysis options. And it's presented in a booklet. And here's everything you need to know about transplant and the drugs you have to take afterwards, how to look after your insertion line for dialysis. Everything was, I have a folder about 3 inches thick, full of paperwork that I can't read. So that was very difficult. And I did ask for it in electronic form, and I was told, oh, well, we don't have it in electronic format, and oh, we'll just get your carer to read it for you. And it just sort of, it was an endless cycle of these sort of conversations.
That clearly and obviously really upset you. One of the things that a couple of people have asked me when I've been talking about your story, said why was Stacey not able to look it up online or find another way of finding the information?
It's a very good question. The answer is I could look some of it up online, but the problem you have is that when you're given something, you know, booklets for dialysis or transplant or the anti-rejection medication, they give you them, they're very tailored booklets, you know, they're very specific and they're very much directed at what you need to know and the practicalities of it. Whereas if you go online, you know, anyone who's ever done a Google search will know that you can come up with a whole host of things, and finding which bit is relevant to me and which bit do I need to know, is it can be difficult. The second thing that made me sort of almost afraid to look online is you can also see a lot of things that actually terrify you. And when you're making a big decision, you know, should I stay on dialysis? Should I go for a transplant? Should I have a deceased donor transplant? I'm lucky enough that I have an option of a live donor transplant. When you're trying to make decisions like that, if you see a horror story online, it can really sway your thinking. Mm-hmm. And that's the last thing that you need. So you really do need to just look at the medical documentation that they give you in the hospital.
Yeah. Now, the reason why we are talking about this today is because NHS England's accessible information standard is going to be fully implemented from the 31st of July. And that means that all providers, medical or adult social care providers in England, are supposed to provide information to disabled patients in their preferred format. So that would make quite a big difference to you if it works properly, right?
Yes, absolutely. And I think, like you say, if it works properly and if people are held accountable, then it could be a great thing, a really good thing. And I think, you know, Rome wasn't built in a day. I think it will take a lot of time to get the message across and to get the information made accessible. But if we can get to that point, I think it will be a game changer for patients.
Mm-hmm. So it's going to be reported on in CQC inspections, so how these providers are checked over time. And there are rumours floating around that the standard will be brought into NHS's contract agreements, so all the contracts that they make with providers, and that would make a huge difference in how it's implemented, I guess. RNIB have a form that you can fill in and download and bring to your GP or your hospital so that they can put a, quote, flag, quote, on their system for what kind of information format you need, whether it be Braille, easy read, email, or what kind of communication support you need, like an interpreter as well. So shall we move on to you, Steph?
Yeah. Hi.
Hi. Steph Nimmo, you are a very busy lady with a lot on your plate. Tell us a little bit about your life just now.
In a nutshell, so I call myself a bit of a plate spinner. So I have four children, Theo's, Andy, Jules and Daisy. My two boys, Theo and Jules, have a diagnosis of high-functioning autism. And each of them presents quite differently, and they've had a lot of issues over the years. Daisy has a really rare genetic condition called Costello syndrome. But you know, we do rare in my family because she also has a very rare manifestation of it that's never been seen before. She has intestinal failure. So she's dependent on a system called total parenteral nutrition for her nutrition needs, and basically to keep her alive 24/7. So she has a Hickman line that goes into her chest. And every day I put up a bag of specially formulated vitamins and minerals that is dripped directly into her bloodstream. She's wheelchair dependent. She has epilepsy. I mean, it sounds absolutely dire, but she's amazing. She's so feisty and determined. She's defied the odds. Shouldn't have made one. And now she's 11 and a half. I do all this on
Fantastic.
My own because, sadly, my husband was diagnosed with cancer just in late 2014, and sadly he passed away just before Christmas. So I found myself last year caring for my husband, who was really struggling with the side effects of chemo, with Daisy and her full-on care, my other, my boys, and my daughter, who needed me just as much as the rest of the family. So, yeah, I have a few things on my plate.
Yeah, a few things. I'm really sorry to know about Andy's cancer as well, and that he sadly passed away. It was that led you to Dr. Kate Granger's campaign. She sadly died last week from cancer. Tell us a bit about the campaign for people who don't know.
Yeah, so basically, when Andy was diagnosed, I kind of found myself trawling the internet. I was just looking for good news stories. I wanted to see stories about people that had survived a stage 4 diagnosis. And you know, you come across blogs. And I stumbled across Kate Granger's blog. And basically, she had been diagnosed with terminal cancer, very rare terminal cancer. But she was also a hospital consultant. And so she had gone from being a consultant treating people to becoming a patient. And the thing that really struck her, when she was told that her cancer had spread, the doctor literally came in, didn't even meet her eyes, told her the cancer had spread and left. She didn't know who he was or anything. And it was almost like she felt completely disempowered and depersonalized, the whole interaction. And she said to her husband, this is wrong. This is, you know, we've lost empathy here and communication. I'm a human being. And between the two of them, they came up with this idea of a hashtag, hello, my name is. And it was just a basic, simple, obvious idea that anyone in the NHS, in healthcare, social care settings, the first thing they should do is just introduce themselves. And it is just, it's a basic thing, really. So, hello, my name is Dr. Whatever, Mr. or Steph. And starting the conversation then as a person-to-person conversation. And so that spread really rapidly throughout the NHS as a basic form of just engaging in empathetically with patients and having a proper dialogue and discussion.
Kathleen and Stacey, have you been following this campaign? Would that have made quite a big difference to you in hospital?
I hadn't heard of this campaign actually until a few days ago, but it's something that resonates with me so strongly. It really does, because when I was diagnosed, the consultant came into, I was in the middle of a public ward, and he came up to me, and he had a band of, you know, 4 or 5 junior doctors with him who were taking notes. And he just walked up to me and said, so your kidneys have failed and there's nothing we can do. And I was just, you know, so taken aback, and there was no lead up to it. There was no, you know, care or introduction or bedside manner. And it was just broken to me like this in the middle of the public ward. I was told I would need dialysis. They'd give me time to think about it, and off they went.
This is such a familiar story, though, isn't it? You know, I keep hearing this over and over. Daisy has a visual impairment, and I was told that in a corridor conversation. Oh, yeah, by the way, your daughter's blind, you know. And I don't know if you found the same, Stacey, but prior to Daisy arriving, Daisy was born prematurely and then spent 2 months in the neonatal unit, and then hospitals are now our second home. She spent most of her life in and out of hospital. Prior to that, I had nothing to do with the NHS. You know, I just avoided hospitals like the plague. So I didn't know what people's roles were, even. I didn't know what a registrar was versus a specialist, registrar versus a, you know, and they kind of assumed and that I would recognise the uniform, you know. I hadn't a clue. And there's this almost a language of hospitals and jargon that you have to learn. It's a big cultural shift and a big assumption that you know what the heck's going on and that you know what they're talking about.
There's a massive learning curve, and I still find out, you know, something that I need to, you know, ask about and think, well, I don't know who I'm supposed to see about that. And that still happens even now. It's been 4 months now. So that is an issue as well, I would say.
Mm. What would make this better? This sounds like something we could all do with a bit of education on.
From my point of view, I kind of looked at the Hello, My Name Is campaign and thought, well, maybe we need to have that interaction on a two-way basis. And if I come in and say, hello, my name is Steph and this is Daisy, and I'm Daisy's mum, and this is Daisy, and she's also got an opinion here. And what do you do? Maybe rather than, it's almost a case of being a little bit more confident and saying, so how do you fit into this? And, you know, who is the team around my child or around, you know, my care, and what are your roles? And I think we almost kind of have to have a bit of a cultural shift as patients, as, you know, as recipients of the healthcare, to question, so how does everyone fit into this?
And you've seen a good example of the Hello, My Name Is campaign that's been implemented, right?
The Evelina, which is part of St Thomas's, has implemented the Hello, My Name Is campaign. And it's so refreshing to go there with a child with a learning disability who's so stressed because she's had such negative traumatic experiences of hospital. She's been through some really painful procedures. You can imagine, Stacey, how you felt, and then think about how that would feel as a 5-year-old and a 6-year-old.
Oh, I can't imagine.
And so she gets so incredibly anxious. And the Evelina, through the Hello, My Name Is, it's just helped really break down a lot of those fears and anxieties. So everyone wears big name badges. I'm really long-sighted, so if anyone wore a smaller name badge, I couldn't even see it anyway. So, you know, and they introduce themselves, and you know, she sees Dr. Charlie, her doctor there, and he sings like Fireman Sam theme tune to her and things. But I just feel that when I go there, I'm working with a team, and I understand how all that team fits in because they are at pains to communicate to me who they are and what they are going to do and how they are going to help.
Communication is a key thing, and if that communication is just hello, my name is, or is it in the form of an accessible letter, if we don't have the communication, we're going to have a lot more of this anxiety and trepidation. I mean, one of the things I fear most about a kidney transplant is being on the ward. It's not the operation itself, it's not even the rejection, although of course that's a scary thought. It's how am I going to, I'm going to be in that bed again, I'm going to be, people are going to come at me with needles again, I'm going to be spoken to, you know, oh, I assume you don't work, I assume, you know, that's sort of things that people would say to me.
Yeah.
Well, why do you assume I don't work? Oh, because you can't see. That sort of thing. I just dread having to go through that again.
I, as a mother, dread having to tell Daisy that we're going into hospital. And explain things, and I feel this, you know, it becomes quite a burden when I think we are going to go in and maybe she's going to have a big surgery. We had a really positive experience last year when my husband was ill. Daisy also had to have a huge 8-hour operation, and I worked really closely with the learning disability nurse consultant at Great Ormond Street, and he spent a lot of time talking to the staff on the ward she was coming into, and the experience was so different because they were expecting her. They knew the things that would make life easier for Daisy and the visit less stressful. And one of the simple things they did is they printed out a notice to put on the door of her cubicle to say, please don't just walk straight in. Check with the nurse looking after Daisy or Daisy's mum that it's okay. And when you do come in, do not approach her from the side because she's got very poor peripheral vision, and she'll hit you because you come in, suddenly someone appears to the side. She's going to whack you.
Quite right.
Exactly.
So that's quite interesting because there's a middle person there, isn't there? There is a communicator.
Yeah.
I wonder if that is somebody who it would be beneficial to have in all departments who can communicate, this is this person and this is this patient's needs.
Yeah, there is definitely a role. I mean, unfortunately, it took us a lot of years to discover there even was a learning disability nurse function.
Right.
And sadly, Great Ormond Street, which is the biggest paediatric children's hospital in Europe, has one learning disability nurse consultant part-time.
Yeah.
You know, and because I've got to know him, we were able to do these things. But that should be across the board. And so therefore, it falls on either the individual to communicate these things when they're actually feeling ill, you know, in Stacey's case, to be pushing back and she's feeling ill and trying to explain. Or in my case, where Daisy uses Makaton, you know, I'm interpreting, communicating on her behalf, and I become multitude of people trying to gatekeep for her and explain what will work and what won't work for Daisy.
It is amazing as well. I found that in my own personal experience of hospital, it was those interactions with human beings that I remembered the most, not the medical procedures, the individual doctors and nurses who either treated the situation incredibly well or not so well that really lasted.
You really remember the good ones and the bad ones, don't you? And when you're on the ward and the new nurse shift comes on and you see a particular favourite nurse, you think, yes, it's going to be a good day today.
You're both just incredibly strong, amazing women.
And we're so pleased and glad to have had Steph Nimmo and Stacey Rowe on the podcast today. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for inviting us.
Thank you.
This has been Inside Ouch. If you want to get in touch with us, you can email ouch@bbc.co.uk. You can find us on Twitter @BBCOuch, like us on Facebook, or go to bbc.co.uk/news/disability.